The Gemara Nedarim, and here's a good chance for me to plug my shiur tomorrow night. I know some people are not coming to the chug, which is fine. I'm happy for people to learn in the afternoon. But just the next couple shiurim, Lech Lecha, Vayera, Chayesara, Toldos, Vayetze, pretty much. Those are really, really central shiur. Really, they're talking about very, very deep, fundamental parts of character or of religion. So either come or try to listen or just try to, you know, get a sense of what the shiur was. A really, really fundamental issue, starting with Lech Lecha. We'll talk a little bit about this tomorrow night, about Avram's life and Avram's development and how that can help our attempts to stabilize their own avodas Hashem. So one of the Gemaras I'll allude to is the Gemara Nedarim Daf Lamed Beis, where the Gemara senses that the Galus Mitzrayim was partially Avram's fault. Some of the mistakes and miscues that Avram makes in Parshas Lech Lecha caused the Galus Mitzrayim. And one day of the Gemara in the Nedarim is, the reason that we're mishtabet in Mitzrayim, it's Amar Rabbi Avo, Amar Rabbi Elazar. If Neiman Nenash Avram Avino v'Eshtabdu Banav leMitzrayim Masayim v'Eser Shanim, v'Neishasa in Gariya b'Tamidi Chachamim. Because when he went to war to rescue Lot, he interrupted people's Talmud Torah. Shenemar vayarak es chanichav yilidei beiso. He gathered his troops. And according to one day in the Chazal, yilidei beiso was not just the people who were in his entourage, but was Eliezer, or the people that were learning. And he went to war at the cost of Talmud Torah. Obviously, this is a very, very provocative statement. And I just want to itemize two related points. They're very different. They're a little bit related, but I want you to see their differences. One of the, in my opinion, people may disagree with this, but one of the gateways you have to walk through, which is much harder to walk through this year, and that's why I'm saying it earlier in the year. I normally don't talk about this till later in the year, but this year it's much, much harder, is how you interact with and view what people call the Haredi world, because it's a very, very large world, and it does, the word, it's a general term. My sense is, I haven't lived in America recently, my sense is that in certain circles, either it's programmed or it's something that develops on its own, there's an unhealthy relationship with the Haredi world, an unhealthy view of that world, disdainful, derogatory, dismissive. It's not a question of laying blame and where it comes from. It's really not important to lay. But I know this early in Eretz Yisrael, it's true. And it pains me a lot. And the reason, and obviously it's a world of depth and strength and avas hatara and commitment and passion. And any person who's really interested in Yirat Shamayim feels a deep kinship with other people who are Ovdei Hashem and Yirat Shamayim. And Rav Aaron's famous statement that 99% of our lives are similar when you break it down to the important issues. There's some very, very visual, prominent, political, contemporary issues that we differ from. But you put on tefillin, they put on tefillin, you daven this morning, they're learning Kiddushin, we're learning Kiddushin, you're trying to do mitzvah. And not just fundamentally, that you want to feel close to all of the Hashem, because it's a bellwether or a barometer for how important avodas Hashem is. I mean, if you feel closer to people who you share sports interests with, and further from people who you share Torah interests with, in some cases it may just show that you, that sports is more important to Torah, and if we form more of a kinship with people who dress like you and follow sports and culture like you. So it's really both reflective and generative of how deeply you feel committed to Torah and Yirat Shamayim. In addition to the fundamental issue, it's also just practically, it's just very hard, especially if you live in America, but even in general, even in Eretz Yisrael, but certainly in America, where for whatever reason, we can talk about the sociological phenomena, and maybe people like myself, Aries, we were saying yesterday, are at fault for moving to Eretz Yisrael. But most, if not the overwhelming force of Torah in Chutz Laretz, has more of a Haredi face to it. Now, whether it's Haredi or Yeshiva, those are different terms, and like it's hard for me to use the word Haredi about someone who drives an SUV and goes to college and has a law school degree, and just because they wear a black kippah, that's more of a yeshivish feel. But certainly there's a certain tilt that many people don't fully appreciate enough. And in many cases, again, especially depending on where you live, it may make it clear. If I live in Teaneck, I'm not defending the claim, but there's enough Torah resources available to me for me to build a deep world of Torah in Yerushalayim. But it's not true if you live in maybe Chicago. Or it's not true if you live in St. Louis. I'm just saying St. Louis because I remember a long time ago, a boy was telling me he's going back for the summer. And I said, well, where are you going to learn for the summer? He says, well, the only base medish in town that's open during the summer is the Lakewood Kollel, and I would never step foot in there. I was devastated. I started to almost go back in tears. I told him, let's say you were a dialysis patient, and the only hospital in town was St. Luke's. You wouldn't go in there? Save your life? Of course you would. So if came Chayin Verachimin, the only Torah location in town is the Lakewood, and you're not going to go in there? Now I know, well, they're not Gareis me. It's not a question of ideology Olympics, whether they accept you. It doesn't make a difference. And you'll find most people on a person-to-person basis really do. It's just the unfortunate message that collectives provide. Most people, when they see you, so both fundamentally, even if you would be living in a city with hundreds and hundreds of modern Orthodox, but also logistically, it's not going to be a successful way to build your Avodas Hashem. Now, the problem is, this year is not the Haredi world's finest hour. And there are a lot of stories and images that, again, you never know the full story, and there are many, many layers to it. But even given that, even rounding it out for not knowing the full story or the full information, it's really hard to defend, for me, to see what's happening. I'm sure there are reasons, I'm sure there's justification. I'm not saying anything ballistic. It's just, it's hard for me, who tries to always understand other people's approaches, because I give people the benefit of the doubt. I happen to respect human beings. It's hard. I mean, I give you the story, I can tell you what's at stake here, what's happening, and I'm just really concerned that, especially in this environment, it's going to drive you further and further away from that world. And I really don't want that to happen. And especially in this yeshiva, where that voice is not as prominent in some of the other yeshivas, because we have a very strong masara. And this is Masara of Ravara, and Masara of the Rav, Masara. So here, that danger of deluding yourself into thinking, oh, I just can be a Gush guy, and not, first of all, you're not a Gush guy, because Gush is so deeply impacted by Ravaran's legacy and his ideas, and Rav Amital as well, and all of us are connected to that world, and all of Yerevan learned. So the fact that you're going to skirt that world, again, you don't have to run after it. You don't have to be obsessed with that world. And you're not a Talmud Chacham unless you learn. And there's another base where you can learn just as well. But just that alienation and distance from that world is something you have to really work on. I have my theories about how it happens. I'm not saying who's to blame, who's not to blame. That's not an issue for us. But when Chazal talk about the primacy of Talmud Torah, when Chazal talk about you shouldn't interrupt someone from their learning, even if they're going to war, and I know Melchavis Mitzvah may be different, there are more sources about your friends and me are not going to the army than there are in Chazal about your friends in Gush going to the army. Now, I happen to teach in Gush. My son's going to the army. Don't worry, my son's it's probably going to be an officer in the army. So it's not an anti-army statement, but just know where the conversation begins. If you start with just the statement of this Gemara, and the Gemara in Bava Basra, and the Gemara in Megillah, the statements more or less stack up that you shouldn't go to the army if you're learning Torah. Now, there are 1,000 different ways to interpret that. We can have a whole shiur on that if you want. I'm happy to talk about it, how people justify it, don't justify it. But a statement such as, oh, that person sitting and learning in Mir is not doing anything for the state of Israel, they're just sitting and learning all day, that is a axiologically flawed statement. How many missiles have been directed at our country? X. How many missiles have created damage? X minus Y, with the Y being very, very close to X, Baruch Hashem. And ungodly or godly disproportion. Why? Because our presence in this country is supernatural. We all believe that. And our supernatural position is enhanced by every Blot Gemara that's learned. And every Blot Gemara that's learned is on behalf of the Jewish people. Now, I'm not sure that culture has been able to perpetuate that message. If it did, in my opinion, people would act more responsibly. If every Haredi boy in yeshiva felt that I'm doing this for Am Yisrael, I'm doing this for Am Yisrael, I'm doing this for Am Yisrael, which is what we'd all like, then part of that is I'm wearing a mask for Am Yisrael and many, 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 many do. So in my opinion, the culture has evolved through several generations where that message has been lost, and it's harder for people to feel that pact with the overall society. But these are just larger issues. I'm not interested in writing articles for newspapers about how the Haredi—I do write articles. But right now, I'm interested in what's in your heart, how your avodah as Hashem will be. When it's Hashem one day, when you're living in a city, and you have to decide which shul to daven in, and you have the following hard choice. A shul which doesn't say tefillah l'shalom ha'medina, or tefillah which does say tefillah l'shalom ha'medina, but there's so much talking you can't hear it anyway. So you're in a bit of a bind. And I'm saying it in a very harsh way, and obviously it's not true, but you may have to decide that you want to daven in a shul that's more yeshivish leaning, because the caliber of your davening will just be better. When I was your age and I came back from Eretz Yisrael, I had to make that decision in good old Brooklyn. And there was a yeshiva shul that was run by Rav Kahn, one of the Rosh Yeshivas in YU. And the announcement of that shul was, like, this was the policy of the shul in Brooklyn. Like, it was 1986, it was just opening. This is a shul in Brooklyn where you have to wear a hat, which in those days where I was living was still like an important statement. And I decided I'm going to daven in that minyan. Like, oh, you don't wear a hat? I said, I'll daven in the minyan, see what happens. I walked in, took a seat in the front, and I davened. No one ever said a word to me. I sat after davening, I learnt with them, kiddush with them, exchanged Torah with them. I used to go back and visit them, my friends, my buddies in the shul. I just walked in, and yes, hat, and I just did my thing. After the call, they asked me where I had, I would have to make a decision. That's already a second layer of conversation. But you'll find that in most cases, most people, if you take them seriously, and you take yourself seriously, you don't try to grandstand, you're not walking into the base matters to show everyone, look at the shirt I'm wearing. You just walk in and you sit and learn. They're pretty comfortable with it. And you find you're able to meet people that help you in ways that you'd be surprised and give you passion and give you drive that you wouldn't have otherwise. So the first part of today's statement is about how to make sense of our interaction with that world in 2020. When I say 2020, our world, okay? The Haredi is a sociological, historical function. It didn't exist before, whatever, 1870. It won't exist in 200. It's just, you're living in this world. There's a split in our society, key issues, State of Israel, women's learning, secular education, a couple other things. All these things will be vastly, vastly different. In 200 years, your great-great-great-great-great-great-grandchild is going to write a book report for his school in Petah Tikva about what Haredi stood for in 2020. And, you know, you'll help him. And, you know, you'll be looking down in Shemayim at your grandson, like, looking up, what was Haredi? Where did it come from? Oh, you'll talk about it. That's not it. The second part of the conversation, which is even more important, is, okay, forget 2020, forget Haredi, yes, no, me, this shul. Just the primacy of Talmud Torah. That's an eternal value. And the irony is, people that don't see themselves in the Haredi world feel, well, I'm not Haredi, I don't stand for the primacy of Torah. No, you stand for the primacy of Torah, but you just feel that there are other parts of the world that justify taking time off from learning Torah. But in a perfect world, you're right, you don't stop learning and you don't waste your time for Talmud Torah for anything other than valuable pursuits that justify not spending time learning Talmud Torah. And that's what interests me more, because that's eternal. That's you. When you get to Shemayim, I promise you, Hashem's not going to quiz you, how did you view the Haredi world? That's not on the final quiz. But Hashem will quiz you with Bittul Torah. Tchilas Din Shel Adam al Bittul Torah. By the way, one of the parts of my Haredi upbringing that I'm very, very grateful for is I call it the Peter Pan effect. Okay, now my Rebbe's wouldn't call it that, because they wouldn't call it Peter Pan. But I do call it that. Remember in Peter Pan, I haven't seen the movie in a long time, the alligator eats a clock or something? Does the in one of the Peter Pans, yes. The alligator swallows a clock, and then you know when the alligator's coming, you hear the tick-tock, tick-tock, tick-tock. I feel like they force-fed me a clock. Namely, I am constantly living on the clock. Don't get me wrong, yes, not that way. But I remember going over to my Rosh Hashiva and saying, I'd like to see a movie this afternoon. It was time off. I wasn't trying to get out of class. And he said, Moshe, you have to learn. I said, I'll make up the time. I'll learn those 2-3 hours at night. He says, but you have to learn those 2-3 hours also. And I was caught, a checkmate, what can I say? And I realized I couldn't sustain that life, and I didn't want to choose that life. But I swallowed a clock. And there's a little part of me that feels that if I'm not learning, I'm failing. And now I fail most of my life. But I hear tick-tock, tick-tock, tick-tock. And not the video tick-tock, I hear real tick-tock, tick-tock. In my gut. I hear real tick-tocks. And I wonder if you guys feel that tick-tock. And I wonder if part of your accomplishment this year can be to feel that clock inside of you. And to feel that every minute of my life after we're learning Torah lets us account for. Now, you can account in minute by minute. They say the Vilna Gaon was shaking on his deathbed, thinking about the 20 minutes he was mevatel, like 30 years earlier, 20 seconds, 20, whatever. Or just general lifestyle. Can my life be the type of life that accounts for Talmud Torah and that worries about Biddle Torah? So you're not going to sit there each day and say, wow, I ate my chicken 3 extra seconds, and therefore I lost 3 seconds. Well, some people live that type of lifestyle. But you say, I can't build a life without taking into account Talmud Torah, not just in a general sense, okay, I want to live in a place and go to Shir, but do you want to be, here's a couple, do you want to be the type of person that if a day passes without Talmud Torah, you feel bad? So something happened today. I heard they were interviewing some Rosh Yeshiva, how he became such a big Talmud Chacham. He said either Tashlumin or Knossos, but there is a minhag in the yeshiva world that if you waste time on Monday, you have to make it up on Tuesday, or you have to pay money. Like they would fine themselves. And if a bittul Torah, if you didn't keep your Seder, self-imposed fines. You have to fine yourself accountability, not just to let the time run free and get lost in the sands of time, but just accountability. And my challenge to you is, and it's so hard because like I struggle with this day and night. Like when I wake up in the morning, my concern is, are the boys in Yeshiva Har Tzion going to be happy? Are they going to have food? Is the new restrictions going to make them, feel suffocated? Are they going to be healthy? Like all day long, 24 hours a day. And when it's not Corona, as I told you earlier, my whole day is, how can I make the boys less happy? How can I push them and move them? And I'm so terrified that this is going to be a year where you end up leaving the yeshiva. I had a great year. The Rebbeim were my heroes. They kept me healthy. There's tons of food. We played bubble soccer. Everything was great. No. Are you moving? Are you climbing? And maybe this week and this Gemara is a good chance to say, like, what are you going to be more makbid on, either in your life or in your Seder? Like, find something concrete to take away from my message today. It could be in your Talmud Torah. It could be you're going to be more attentive to Bittul Zman. It could be you're not going to end Seder before 1 o'clock religiously. You're not going to get out of your seat. I have a hard time getting out of my seat before 1 unless I absolutely have to. Like I feel like Rav Lichtenstein is, give me the eyes. What are you getting out of your seat before 1? Is that the issue? Is it going to be stretching your night Seder a little more? Is it going to be learning in the afternoon? Or maybe that's not where you're at right now. It should be something else. Be more makbid on brachos with kavana. Be more makbid on berachas mazon. Saying it with there has to be some tenacity and commitment, rather than just I want to be, I'm going to be, I'm thinking of. Details are important in life also, and if you can start locking in details of Talmud Torah and taking this whole process seriously, and not that you're not taking it seriously, but so this Gemara of Avram. First of all, it's 2:20, and a lot of your lives, I imagine, is going to be, unless you become a Haredi. And believe me, if you become a Haredi, I'll be the happiest man alive. If you decided you wanted to move to Mir and join, I'll drive you. I'll set it up for you. My close friend is Rabbi Yosef Elephant. He gives him Chabura there, or Shir there. We've known each other for 45 years, and I can get you in. Don't worry. Easy. Front row seat. And I'll be the happiest person alive. But assuming you don't make that decision, and also be the happiest person alive, and you live a life of Avodas Hashem and Yirat Shamayim, that's a world that you can't vilify, and you can't ignore, and you should try to use. You shouldn't fix it. I think there are some people in our world that are also obsessed with it, that I'm not firm if I'm not Haredi. And it just means it's a world with deep, deep people who are really successful at Avodas Hashem, and how can you grow from that? How can you grow together? You in your way, they in their way. But second of all, obviously, more importantly, is forget Haredi and not Haredi. This is our Gemara also. It's not their Gemara. It's our Gemara also. If it's our Gemara, how do we go to battle? Okay, it's different. It's Medinas Yisrael. It's Al Sefashos. It's Mechamis Mitzvah. It's also, we have people called secular Jews, right? The Gemara is talking to people who are very, very happy to say, oh, you're learning Torah, don't go to battle. We'll go to battle for you because we're all from it. It's really, really great because we're happy to excuse Yeshiva Bachim. We live in a state in which people, not just unhappy, excusing Yeshiva Bachram, but very angry with Yeshiva Bachram and not serving in the army. It's creating a lot of ill will and a lot of hatred and a lot of tension. We hope to try to solve that tension. And Achrayim says, that's not my issue. Let HaKadosh Baruch Hu worry about that. I just want to learn Kiddush and Daf Vav in the base. Okay, so just think about that. Food for thought. Josh, agree, disagree? You think the Charedim are terrible?
Well, no, I don't think they're terrible.
Yes.
In terms of people's mind, what's the minimum maximum amount someone could be sleeping at night?
Echad Amarva, Echad Amarva.
The report that says the builder goes up 8 hours is even greater.
Guys, everyone is their own. Don't try to outgun. Lesson in life, really. Stay within yourself. Be challenged by people of great accomplishment, but have the confidence in yourself to walk your own way. Okay? Some people, I walk my own way, I don't listen to anyone. I know what's right. That's terrible. That's insularity, self-mediation. Some people are always chasing other people. Always chasing other people. Interestingly enough, in the Haredi world, a lot of it, you know, the Gedolim do this, that may be appropriate for a Gedol. You're necessarily, it's a Chumra for them. Have the confidence to say, how can I be the best Moshe Targum? What's right for me? What fits for me? What, without always looking, and, you know, I always have this conversation, and I'll turn it off now because I don't want to embarrass people.